Sunday, February 11th, 2024. We're here for Art of Departure 8. This has been quite a series that obviously has been going on for now, coming 8 times since April. And last month, we had such an intensive conversation about MAID, medical assistance in dying. And since then, things have happened where the government in Canada has put it on hold. Well, not put it on hold, it's still an active option for people. What they've done is they've put a pause on the expansion of it, the legislation to expand it to include people who have a mental disorder as the sole underlying condition. And it's not on moral grounds. It's because they feel like they're not ready for the expand of the demand. And we've got Kayla on for the first time. You're familiar with Russell Brand, I would think, eh?
Yes, definitely.
Christina sent it to me of him talking about MAID. He actually went into quite a bit about it, which was very interesting. And I made some notes.
Was he more pro or against it?
He was definitely concerned about it. Yeah. We have some more people coming in here, Christina and Tony.
I feel like even people who are pro it would have concerns about it.
I think so. Yeah. Hello, Tony. Nice to see you.
You too. I know. It's February. When
I
was the
know.
last time we talked?
Maybe December, and you were
Right?
heading for your cruise. What do you call it?
Dementia friendly.
Oh, dementia friendly. Yeah, right. So we haven't talked since you've been back from that.
Really? Well, I went on one in October, came back in November, and I just got back Sunday from the
Yeah,
January cruise.
from the January one, right.
Yeah, and I'm tired.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you coming in, and there's Christina coming in from Spain. Hello,
Oh my
Christina.
God.
And we've got Kayla on. She's a young friend of mine who I know from recent times here in Ontario through Druthers, through the Druthers newspaper. We both are quite involved in that community and sharing that alternative news source with many people. Christina, I was just saying to Kayla that you'd sent that audio by Russell Brand, which was very interesting because he had quite a long stretch there looking at the MAID situation, the medical assistance in dying. Yeah, Kayla was just saying that even people who are for it also, a lot of people do have concerns anyway, just about where it's going. Are you familiar with it, Tony? Are you familiar with this medical assistance in dying happening in Canada?
Yes, somebody, I didn't listen to your podcast, but I am a little bit familiar with it because, oh, Junie Squadron had a friend that used the system.
Okay. Yeah, Dennis is just coming in.
Might be background. I have a canary in my
Oh, you have a canary. Yeah, that'll do it.
room. Lemon, lemon. Sorry. He likes to
Right.
sing sometimes when he hears new voices.
Right. That's hilarious.
Let me just mute my mic while he finishes.
So sweet. Hello, Feather. You're doing some embroidery or sewing. You've got a pile of fabric behind you.
My little circle skirts I'm making for 8 to 12 year olds.
Oh.
Gonna be selling them at the market this summer. One of my products I'm doing, so I enjoy hand sewing, so I'm gonna sew while I listen or maybe I talk.
Okay, awesome. And that's great. And I'm glad you could join us. Just saying hello to Dennis, who's just joined us as well. Hi, Dennis.
Hey, Lynn. I'm really not on a cruise ship. We just got back from one.
That's our ship.
Wow. Do you want to briefly tell us, Tony and Dennis, what you do on these dementia-friendly cruises?
Go ahead, Dennis.
Tony and I have been doing cruises now since 2019, and these cruises are intended for families that have loved ones with dementia. And we go with a travel agent who organizes these events. But Tony and I do the programming and presentations, as well as support, and sometimes get a little fun in for ourselves too. But frequently, it is heartfelt work because last cruise we had 31 on our cruise group, 9 of which had dementia, 11 caregivers, many of which required additional support from ourselves. So, this was my 8th cruise. Tony, how many have you been on?
It's been 5 years, so could be that many. You were on a few more than me because you started before I did. 7 or 8. We go different places.
Very interesting work. Just to say, I know Tony because of the book in Over Her Shoulder here, 21 Mistakes Caregivers Make and How to Avoid Them. I met her through the publisher, and also her book coach was someone that, who I know as well. That's how we met each other, was me helping her get that polished up for publishing. And then I met Dennis through Tony. Yeah, I just feel like doing a little walk around here. Christina and I met through another mutual friend's book, I Just Want Peace, with Sandy Levy Lundeen. We did some collaborative editing with her and with each other and them with each other. That was a huge project. Really great to know you, Christina. I feel like we've known each other a long time now. Feather and I met on our way. We were individually heading out west in 1978 and met up with each other in Winnipeg and again in Banff and went fruit picking, and a lot's happened. And then we fell out of touch in 1982 and then just reconnected 3 years ago. Yeah. And then I helped her edit her book, as it turns out. Bobby's just coming in.
Hi. Sorry I'm late.
No, that's fine. It's come when you can, stay as long as you wish, which always makes it interesting. So yes, we've got Bobby, our born medium, in the house here. We've got Tony and Dennis and Christina and Feather and Kayla. Kayla is not able to come on video, but she is present with us with a bird singing in the background sometimes. So we may hear that again.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So I was just saying that, as you know, Bobby, from last time, it was just such an intensive conversation about medical assistance in dying, and how since then the expansion of it has been put on pause. And it all started in 2015 when it was deemed that it was against people's rights to die. That's how the whole thing started, was that people had the right to die if they wanted to. So they made changes in the criminal code, which allowed people to access this as sort of state-sanctioned suicide, really. I mean, it's assisted dying, assisted death. And so they made those changes. And then in 2021, there was these changes so that they had like track one and track two. So track one, get on a train, track one was if your death was reasonably foreseeable, then you could qualify, you could apply and have time to think about it and everything, right? And then track two came into view. Russell Brand had a very interesting commentary on it. And a really interesting point that he made was that track two, so your death was not reasonably foreseeable. That's everybody else. But then you also had to have informed consent. You needed to be able to give consent. So I don't know how that would work with somebody with a severe mental disorder. I mean, variations of mental disorder, but how would that even be possible? That's a big part of the question, right?
Yeah, it's a huge part of the question.
Yeah. So Kayla was just saying when we first got on here that, you know, she thinks that even people who would be pro-made, pro the option, would still have concerns and still think that there should be safeguards. And a lot of people say there are safeguards. However, I'm also just hearing recently that I don't have a source, but apparently a 12-year-old can apply for MAID without consulting with her parents or their parents.
That seems crazy, because a 12-year-old,
that's no different than the vaccine. They didn't have to consult with their parents to get a vaccine at 12 years old, because the state wants ownership of the body, that they maybe they always actually have had ownership of the body, but now we're just, it's, the veil is very thinning, and we're seeing how everything's, life and death is a business, and the doctors get paid too for all of these. I mean, the article in Druthers was very interesting, just to see some of the examples, like that woman who finds an email of her son's where the doctor's telling him to come in for the appointment and, you know, bring your dog, but make sure that somebody's there to take your dog after we put you out. And the mother discovered this and phoned the doctor and pretended to be somebody else, that, you know, I'm a diabetic and I'd like to end my life. And he made an appointment for her until she, then she revealed it to the public. But that was too, it was just too easy to do for a kid not to have their parents' permission. Who isn't a little bit hormonally upset as a teenager? We're number one in the world now for euthanasia. So Russell Brand had some very good points in his monologue. Is this our government's responsibility to give us the right to? I think, yes, if you're terminally ill and you're suffering, that's one thing. Mental illness and being poor, that's something else. And that's where they're going now. So everything, as you see, it becomes gradual, very just drip, drip, drip until it's accepted. And then it's like universal. And then it's like, oh, how did we get here?
It's the normalizing of it. And I don't know if any of you saw this video. I can send these links in the follow-up email of Russell's talk about it. And also this one, it's a website called Terminal Wellness. They're supposed to be satire, but they're quite dark. And one of them is having somebody who's just, you know, he's decided it's time to go and he's so happy. And his family's around him, but he's an older guy, you know, and I guess maybe he's ill or something, but he's just looking so happy. And the family's just sort of all, you know, sort of, they're all just sort of doing their thing. But this is coming up for him where he's going to lay down and go off. But this one I saw this week was with sort of Muppet style puppets. And one of them was singing with a little guitar of some kind. And it's quite a catchy jingle. And he's singing to these kids who are sick. Like they obviously, you know, they're going through cancer treatment or various things going on with these three kids. And he's singing, "It's okay to pass away today. It's okay to pass away." Like what? Like one kid sees that and gets permission. The normalizing of it is just outrageous.
Looked it up. You have to be 18. I know you have to be 16 to get the pill. So I can't imagine that you can be 12 and get made. So, because yeah, you have to be over 16 for your parents to not be called if you want to go on the birth control pill. Or at least that's what it was when I turned 16. I went on the birth control pill without my parents' consent, because I did. So, because they didn't know I was sexually active. But yeah, they say that you need to be 18. Is the 12-year-old possibly a one-off? Is that like a special?
I think that it was maybe with your parents' consent. 18 is...
You need to be 18 to qualify.
To be qualified.
For MAID.
Yeah. They originally thought they could do it for babies too. And that was considered. They opted out on that one. It's just like, well, you know, yeah, just born, die, you know, hey, thanks for coming. There's certainly situations where it's going to be more stressful on yourself and your family and a burden. If you're suffering, you're suffering, and you maybe can opt out, but everyone's suffering in one way or another on this planet right now, or you're not human. Russell Brand says who hasn't had the thought of wanting to opt out?
Yeah, and there's a number of people like Andrew Lawton, whose link I sent, and I'll include that again. He is, as well as any of us, yeah. I mean, at some point, if that had been an option, and if it becomes normalized, people will just think, oh, well, maybe I'll do that. It's not going to get better. I don't know how this is going to turn around. But that's a big part of what Andrew said, was that he's glad it wasn't an option 10 years ago, or he wouldn't be here now, you know, and he's a prolific journalist, and he's doing all kinds of good work. And all of us, it comes down to, well, what is the purpose of life? Is the purpose of life not to suffer? Like, is it better to die? I remember being a teenager and thinking, I didn't have plans to die, but I just felt like I was afraid. I didn't know what life was about. I didn't know what I was looking ahead to. And every day seemed the same, going to school. And I just figured I was going to die. And then I found this note recently where I just decided to take a deep breath and keep going and just do my best each day. And then I was afraid I was going to die somehow after I decided I wanted to live. I just can't imagine what it's like for children to have, yeah, the option to die, or even know that that is like, it's permitted, like it's allowed. Like it's like Russell said, like getting highlights for your hair, you know, yeah. Like, so.
I tried to kill myself as a teenager, and there was not MAID or anything like that, but there was aspirin in the medicine cabinet.
And that's what I used too.
Yeah. If you want to kill yourself, you're going to find a way. I've had so many people in my life kill themselves, And it doesn't matter what you do. They figure out a way to go because they just want to go. But I know where I'd go. I talk to the people on the other side and I ain't going there right now. Thank you very much. Because I think people can be actually suicidal. I think it actually can be a mindset. Yes, with a lot of young people given the opportunity, they will take that opportunity not knowing what death actually is. But I can't imagine they could go to our government and say, I'm feeling pretty teenage angsty. Could I get a pill or two and do away with myself? I can't imagine that the government would say, sure, no problem. Am I wrong?
It seems to be compared to Nazism in a way of having a government say, you know.
We are not rounding up a faith of people and putting them in death camps here in Canada.
No, but the ideology is still there, is part of a death cult. It's not going towards life. It's not going towards rebirth. It's not going towards, let's look at this situation and improve upon it. It's easier to get rid of the problem.
You can't possibly compare it to 30 million Jewish people being annihilated.
Well, a lot of the rest of the world, when they look at what Canada's doing, is using that terminology.
And it started somewhere. It didn't just go to that sudden total right away. It started with one person having a daughter with disabilities who asked if there could be a mercy killing. And apparently Hitler said yes. I mean, this is what I just heard about. It started somewhere.
He was a psychopathic sociopath. He was a piece
of... So is Trudeau.
No, he's not. Okay. Trudeau is not rounding up people around me and putting them in camps. He is not doing that. Do I see this? Am I blind?
It's done with paper. It's done in a different way. It's behind closed doors. It doesn't look the same. Doesn't mean it's not happening.
Oh, I'm sorry. You cannot. I don't know what is being done on paper that you're speaking of, but you can't possibly... You can't possibly compare it to what the Nazis did to the Jewish people, and not just the Jewish people. They experimented on these people. They gassed children.
They did that with the vaccine in the last three years.
I'm sorry. I got upset. I'm sorry. No, it's not the same.
Experiment?
No, it's not. It was their way of trying to cull the thing that was going on. It's not the same as rounding up a
fake. Well, it's not the same, but it's still an ideology that...
I think making a comparison is an insult to all of those people who died and all of those people who are related to the people who died. I think that's an awful slippery slope to go down.
They said it in Druthers. Russell Brand referred to the same thing in a different way. It's not the same story. It never is, but there's some overlays.
Actually, it can be the same story. And we in Canada did do this. We had concentration camps for Japanese people during the Second World War. We had residential schools. That's a concentration camp for children, for goodness sakes. What is happening now is not the same. It's not even the tiniest.
No, it's not the same, but if we don't stop it, it could be.
But what is it that you are worrying about? I don't understand, honestly.
Well, this article says we are beyond hurtling down the slippery slope as Nazi Germany did in the 30s. That started with the sanctional mercy killing of loving father's severely handicapped daughter. We're falling off the cliff. We know the Trudeau liberal regime is committed to normalizing euthanasia on demand and expanding access to those with mental disorders. We trust we must hold firm in faith and prayer and commit to action by reaching out to local MPs to reverse course. So, I mean, he's not saying this is Nazi Germany. It's just we're going down a slippery slope as they did in the 30s. So it's not that this is where we're at, but if you look at it, it's a slippery slope.
You did compare it directly to Nazi Germany.
It's a slippery slope like Nazi Germany.
It's nothing like Nazi Germany.
Were you there? I wasn't there. I don't know.
So because I wasn't in Nazi Germany, I can't possibly speak to what happened to those folks? You can.
Everyone, no, I can't.
Really, you can't. So what are you saying? What are you saying when you say that? I don't understand.
It's a slippery slope as a situation like that. We could look at another situation. We don't have to, okay, how about the witch burnings?
I need to interrupt here for one reason, because I it's just not going to work to have you talking over each other. I'm not going to be able to use that at all. And also, I want to welcome Pauline and Dwayne who have joined us. Hello. For the first time.
Hi, thank you. Mm-hmm. Mom was getting home a little later than I thought, but anyways, she's here.
Okay, that's great. And Yeah, the funeral that I mentioned in my email was with these beautiful people. And so just wanted to mention that and welcome. I'm really glad that you guys can join us. Yeah, we're having a bit of a hot spot here because of differing opinions about comparing MAID medical assistance in dying in Canada with what happened in Germany. This is not a new contentious issue, you know, to try to understand what happened, how that happened, not wanting that to happen again. Some perspectives on what's happening in Canada. I mean, Canada is the top euthanasia country in the world right now, and that is something of concern to a lot of people. Things have been put on pause. Some people are upset that it's put on pause for the people who do have a sole underlying condition of a mental disorder. We're hoping that this legislation, this expansion would open up in March, in a month. And now it's been put on hold until 2027 because they want to get it right, apparently. They want to have things in place for this to happen. And apparently somebody was upset about the article in Druthers about the topic because they're older and they have a condition that they're going to be deteriorating, and they want to have that as an option. You know, everybody's going to have different situations and different opinions. Kayla has just said here, in the Netherlands, MAID is allowed for minors age 12 and over and may soon be expanded to include younger children. Dutch children between the ages of 12 and 16 must have parental consent, while those between 16 and 18, parents must be consulted but do not have a veto. I mean, this is the thing. And again, I'll just say that the concern for me is that it's becoming normalized and it's becoming a lifestyle choice or a death style choice or whatever you might want to say. It's becoming normalized, and children now believe that it's okay to choose the option to die. If they feel depressed, perhaps, or maybe they have a hearing loss. Even I've heard people are applying for having a hearing loss. And then that they can also change their gender, which is another issue. But I just can't even imagine the pressure on children to make choices that really are beyond. I think it just took so much to get here into physical form. And we're not here for long anyway. And, you know, yes, there's the argument that we're going to die anyway. So, well, so why wait? Or how about wait? You know, it's not like some of us are going to die and some of us aren't. We're all going to get there at some point. I'm just talking away here and muted everybody. Like I've heard it said that it's a permanent solution to a temporary problem. I think that there is such a beautiful mystery about how death happens. And I think by prolonging life, we're preempting that. By cutting lives short, we're preempting that. Like, what is wrong with just going through the mystery of death and making that transition? Anyway, I appreciate everybody being here and being willing to speak. You know, these are obviously sensitive topics, and it's okay to have different opinions. I just want to add what Kayla added here. The option is also being pushed for veterans seeking help, be that mentally, physically, as an alternative to spending the time and money actually helping them. And that was one of the things in the expanded bill with MAID in 2021, was that people had to be offered support of different kinds, but they didn't actually have to make use of it. They just had to be, you know, offered it. So that's not really the same as actually helping people. And Duane?
Yeah, I was just going to say, Lynn, when I showed your article from the January Druthers to somebody just the other day there, I had commented about you know, where it was referring to Canada having the highest rate. But he's like, oh, Holland, maybe we've surpassed them by now. But because I can remember when this debate was opening up in Holland, and the people that were saying, oh, you know, the slippery slope and what next, grandma in the hospital. So what you were just saying about this idea of, you know, kids over 12 and stuff. Yeah, there's the slippery slope. This was way back when I first started hearing the dialogue pertaining to Holland, right? Yeah. So yeah, it's pretty much out of control, I would say. But I mean, like you said, with them halting it until 2027, but for us in Canada, it's the, I keep telling people, you know, the 8 years of a Liberal government under Justin Trudeau, right, which needs to go. But that I just wanted to say that mention in reference to Holland there, right? Because everybody thinks it's Holland. There's such a much smaller population than us, obviously, right? So
yeah, thank you, Duane. And one of the comments on the last Art of Departure was that, you know, it accounts for 4% of deaths, which you can say, well, that's not too many, but it's actually quite a lot.
Yeah. So, oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a scary situation. It's crazy. I can't imagine, even though there's aspects of life that are rough, that there isn't something to look forward to at, you know, the end of the day or the week, whatever, you know, another, as in my sister's case, another trip over to the Toronto Islands on the ferry with the dogs and a bonfire and camping out and the dogs going swimming in the lake, which she loved, you know, or something. Yeah, no, I can't imagine wanting to exit prematurely before I'm meant to, in whatever way God deems fit. Yeah, no, I want the maximum capacity of it, the good and the bad, and just learn to survive it, right?
Yeah, it's a lot to come to terms with how people make different choices. And like you said, Bobby, when someone wants to take their life, they're going to find a way to do it. And even if we, I just read about this guy who's written a book about choose life, and yet he still wants to option mate. So I don't know, even with people's support coming into him. So thank you, Dwayne. Bobby, go ahead.
Personally, when I was 16 years old, my mother decided to pull my father's plug, which was the same freaking thing. And she did it because she was told what my father would face with his brain after the aneurysm ruptured on it. So she made the choice to not put him through that, because he was a man who very, very much cherished his intelligence and his ability with his brain. So she decided to no longer make him suffer and pulled the plug. That's the same thing as MAID. It's 100% the same thing as MAID. And we've been pulling people's plugs. I was 16 at the time and I'm 52 now. So it was 36 years ago. It's the same darn thing. I don't understand why everyone's getting so upset about it. As a person who deals with the dead on a daily basis, being dead is much better than being here. Much, much better by all accounts. Committing suicide and choosing mate are two very, very different things. I understand that a lot of people don't understand not wanting to be here anymore, because they're not in that position anymore. But I'll tell you, if my mother had kept my father in a wheelchair drooling in the corner of our, and I had to watch that until he finally passed away, that would have been hell for him, hell for me, hell for her, hell for all of us. So dying is a blessing sometimes. And maybe if it's God's will, then what God has done is put everything in place so you have no other actual good conscious choice. That's, yeah. And I have someone who in my life was just going to do MAID, but they passed away just before and they were suffering. And I would never, ever, ever have said to them, no, please don't do this because it'll upset me, because I could not possibly be that selfish. She was suffering. She was in pain constantly. Her life had no meaning because she just sat on a couch. So I don't think people do it because they're depressed. They do it because it really, really sucks to be in chronic pain. It really, really sucks to not have control of your physical self. And you're just releasing the physical self. And that, yeah, that's my opinion. I don't think that it's a bad thing at all, but that's just me.
Thank you, Bobby. There's so many things. Okay, so you said that you think that it's better to be dead than alive. Well, okay, well, so if it's better, why are we even here then? If it's better to be dead than alive, why are we even here? Yeah, go ahead.
We're here to learn. This is actually just a stop for your soul. This is one of the hardest stops that we ever have to go through. But we are here to learn how to be better souls and to be better people and to be better to each other and to realize that we are all connected to each other. And we are all one, really. And you can say one under God, because it's all the same thing. All the jargonisms that we have as living human beings is all the same. But if you do commit suicide unduly, if it's not a mental health issue, then you have to do it again. And you have to learn why you gave away that gift. It's not like you get a free pass for committing suicide, but MAID is seen as different because you don't have choices. And yeah, that's what I see on the other side.
You don't have choices?
Yeah, if you have something like what my aunt had, she had severe breast cancer. She was in pain all the time. She could barely breathe. She actually couldn't breathe without an oxygen tank. She couldn't move. She couldn't do hardly anything. Her cognitive reasoning was not where it was, and this was a brilliant woman. And so she had no other choice but to start thinking about making that choice for herself. That's what I mean by that.
And then she died.
She died before it happened. Yeah. But she was going to make that choice. And I was going to help her because she asked me to. And I thought it was an honor.
And how would you help her?
Apparently, she got this home package. I was supposed to help her with the home package.
A do-it-yourself kit?
Yeah, like a do-it-yourself sort of kit. Yeah. But I didn't get to.
Thank you, Bobby. Dennis?
I'm not sure of the organization of my thoughts, but I know that you're talking about a Canadian issue that has been put off for several years. I have not heard that talked federally in the States, although I understand Oregon has a much more liberal inaction policy through medicine. But I want to relate discussion to what I had to deal with when my wife was diagnosed with terminal Alzheimer's. And that was a shock to hear the word that she had a terminal condition. And Bobby, it's not like an aneurysm in the brain that your father had. Alzheimer's is a very slow-moving disease. And it's the longest goodbye that unfortunately we have because it's an invisible disease. But during the disease, I learned a lot about preparing my wife and I for some decisions we had to make, and then sharing that with our family. Because through what I went through, there was a pamphlet called Five Wishes, I believe put out by the Alzheimer's Association, I'm not sure. But there's another program called the Conversation Project. And the Conversation Project is one that wants to induce communication among family so that you could spell out under what conditions you would consider stopping life support. We're not talking suicide. I don't favor the suicide discussion for people under the age of 18 when they have a more mature effect on their lives in some cases. I think mental health needs to be employed at a greater level, as we've seen with PTSD and trying to help those who suffer coming back from very strenuous conditions, and even PTSD when it comes to crises in the family. So mental health, I believe, is more necessary than having this legislation that regulates, and if it's under 18, it sounds like infant post-birth abortion. It just doesn't seem fair that people under the age of 12 or even 18 can make these decisions without going through some mental health and an appropriate advice and guidance. Now, for me, I didn't have to pull the plug on my wife. She died naturally with the unfortunate instance of COVID creating such isolation that her deterioration happened quicker for her and certainly affected me. So just wanted to share those thoughts. And Lynn, I don't know if it's the appropriate discussion point for me to share this, but I appreciate the venue.
Oh, absolutely, Dennis. I really appreciate you being here and sharing so articulately your experience and with your wife, because this forum is an open place to talk about matters before, during, and after death. I mean, that's what the point is, just to have a place to share some impressions and experiences so that we have that opportunity to listen as well as to express things that, you know, are not often talked about in general conversation with people, right? So no, I appreciate you being here and thank you for that. And you and Tony met overlapping with your wife's passing, is that right?
We did. We met before my wife was actually placed in memory care. And then throughout memory care, Tony was there to support me as Nancy's caregiver and mentor me to be a better caregiver. And she was there as Nancy passed. Well, I didn't see Nancy die. She died in a nursing home. Isolation from COVID restricted my access. But she's seen the effects that this has, and hopefully future national emergencies will not create such strict restrictions on access.
Yeah, that was really crazy. Well, thank you. Yes, Kayla.
It very much feels like society is kind of stressing us out and depressing us with everything that it's throwing at us these days. And then to have them make made easier to obtain for people who are depressed, who could very likely get through that depression and continue to live long and full lives. Very dangerous and slippery slope to set it up that way without any way to stop that, because it'll end up getting abused, as we have seen happen in other countries such as the Netherlands. I'm not sure if there's no cut and dry way to go about it, saying that no, you can't have MAID or MAID for whoever wants it. It's a complicated issue, and it has to, giving the government the permission to just kind of put whatever is not something that I personally feel comfortable with, because where does it stop?
Yeah. Thank you, Kayla. Go ahead, Feather.
Yeah, I'm going to do an about turn here. This is a great reveal. I may have said it to Lynn before, but I'm an asthmatic. So my truth is that I could actually kill myself by not taking my inhaler. I have no intention to do that. I love life. I love the fact that I'm here on earth to expand my soul and my consciousness. But it has occurred to me, as I age, I wonder if I'm in a situation that I forgot my inhaler. Like, the inhaler is a medical intervention for my body. But if I don't have it, sincerely, and I'm not trying to get your empathy or sympathy, if I don't have one on me or in the car, it doesn't take long for me to go into, it's not a cardiac arrest or anything like that. It's just, I can't breathe. So I have to stop. I have to lay down. And I thought, wow, like in the future, if I'm ever in a situation that's very, very dire, I just don't have to take my inhaler. And that was given to me medically. I mean, I've been on inhaler since 12 years old. I'm 65. So it's an interesting state, because I definitely would not consider suicide. Like I said, it's not in my way. But yet I have the gift of giving that to myself if everything was super dire. And it's a conundrum. And I never really talk about this. Of course, I don't want that to happen. But that's probably how I am going to die, is by naturally not being able to breathe anymore. So it keeps me on the edge. It keeps me on the edge into the invisible world a lot. Like, I see a lot up in that dimension or different dimensions. And somewhat might say it's all just your imagination, but I don't see it as my imagination. I see it as as a connection to keep me in the space of, hey, it's all okay. It's all okay no matter what. So, you know, I often think, I've often said this, and whether I'm predicting it or not, is that I'll probably be gone in 5 to 7 years. And that's okay if that happens. And am I predicting my own death? Maybe. Do I kind of want that? Maybe, maybe not. I don't want to live in suffering any more than my body already is through not having enough breath. Yeah, and you know, you think about people that are on a lot of drugs to keep them alive. And it's like, well, if you slowly remove those drugs that aren't natural, they're man-made, they would slowly die. It's like fasting from drugs. I remember hearing recently somebody was wanting to starve themselves to die. So they started fasting and they actually got more life. They got out of depression because things altered in their body, and they weren't taking in the same addiction type foods or whatever it is that they were on, and they started to live. So it's like a form of fasting from that which has been imposed on us or put in us through the medical institutions or whatever, because any of these people, anybody who has a disease is on a drug. Let's say it like that. Like, I can remember when taking care of my mom is like, she was on this blood pressure drug. Like, and I said, Mom, how long have you been on that? She's like, oh, about 25 years. I'm like, do you think it's really necessary? So we did a check. I just brought her to the doctor. And the doctor's like, no, you don't need this anymore. And that didn't cause her death. He was like, that one's not necessary. I don't even know why your doctor or whoever prescribed that has put you on that for so long.
Wow.
Like, it could be the same for me. If I didn't take my asthma drugs, maybe I would come back to breathing more. I don't know. I've never done the experiment. It's tough if I don't can't breathe. So, you know, I'm throwing a different kind of angle on it. Interesting to have input. If not, doesn't matter. We're here to share. This is life, huh? I'm glad I'm in it.
Thank you, Feather, for sharing. Yeah, I can just imagine that that would be just a constant choice you're making, right, from what you say. I mean, I'm not on that line so much as you are, but I think about death every day. Like, if I stepped out now, what am I leaving? You know, like, are the dishes done? You know, that type of thing. Go ahead, Bobby.
I was just thinking when Feather was talking about what was going on with her, and they kept showing me, I can't, okay. Plato had the rock fall on his head. Aristotle took the hemlock. Or is it Plato took the hemlock and Aristotle had the rock fall on his head? I can't remember which one, but all I could see was you with hemlock in a little ring. Like, you have a default button. It's almost great, but it's obviously not great. But it's that you have like a little button you can push and say, I want out, I'm done. And push your, because I used to date someone who required an inhaler. Holy poop. And he used to smoke cigarettes. So we ended up in the ER like every 3 days. It was ridiculous. And yeah, what you got, he would be suffocating in his own body. I can't even imagine. So I wanted to say that to you, Feather. Sorry. And I think that your perspective is wonderful because you come from a perspective of somebody who actually has a physical thing going on with their body that they have to balance at all times, that they could take into an imbalance if they really decided to do so. And I love the fact that you're constantly staying in balance and that you understand why you're here.
Yeah, it's a journey. It's a journey. I can remember once in Singapore, I went to a new specialist after having an asthma attack. And she's like, you know, you're breathing out of 1/3 of your lungs. I said, but I'm like, I breathe. And then she put me on a regimen of a new drug. And yeah, I did get some relief from that particular moment in that time frame. And I was on that drug for a while. Then I went to an asthma doctor in Cranbrook near where I live. And this doc, oh man, I didn't like him. But I had, again, another situation where I had an asthma attack and they'd have the x-rays of my lungs. He's like, look at your lungs. Look at the x-ray of your lungs. They're all stretched out. They're like this long. He says, you should be dead by now. And now we're going to put you on this drug. So you started to put me on different drugs and one for my nose and this. I experimented very shortly. And then I couldn't, the one that was affecting my sinus, whatever, I couldn't even talk. It affected the way I spoke and sung. So I went back to him and like, you know, as you do 1 or 2 months later, he's like, how's it going? I'm like, well, I stopped that drug and I stopped that drug. And he was not happy with what I was doing. And he was trying to really dig into me that I'm going to die. I'm like, well, if that's the case, that's sort of okay because your drugs are really hard on my body and I don't want to put them in. So I never saw him again. And I'm still living many years later. So it's choice, huh? Choice.
Indeed. Thank you both for sharing there. Oh yeah, right. I'm just going back to notes I made listening to Russell Brand's monologue last night was the right to die. The right to die, like meaning you have a right to die, but is it right to die, right? Like, is it wrong, right to die? So there's sort of that play on words. And then there's also having a reason to live. And again, it comes back to purpose and values. And it's not to make it wrong if somebody wants to leave. I don't want to put it that way. I just think that each of us needs to feel okay about making a decision about what's right for us. And, you know, to keep living and just take what comes and hope for the best and hope to live, like Feather, like you were saying, look ahead to that and be willing to take it on. And also just know that, you know, your perspective might change. Yeah, like if you fast and then you think, hey, wait a minute, I'm feeling this renewed desire to live. It's natural to have rough days. I was feeling really in a quandary yesterday. There was a number of things I wanted to do and I was just having trouble focusing. And Kayla called me up, which was great. So I had a reason to go out and meet up with her briefly. And that just helped just to have connection. It's about connection, right? Sometimes you don't want to just be all in your own head, you know? I think it really is important to respect each other and ourselves in what's right for us, because we don't know what's right for anybody else. And we can't presume that. So they're putting this, the expanded legislation for mental disorder being the sole underlying condition, they're putting that ahead for 3 years to get ready. So I'm not really sure what getting ready for that means. And if they were ready, then does that mean that a lot of people then would be checking out that way? You see, on the last call, they were saying it's not that the people want to end their lives. They want to stop the suffering. So there's a distinction there, apparently. You have something to say about that, Bobby?
I agree. I agree completely and absolutely. And actually, it's strange, but I'm going to share it. I had a person call me for a reading, and what they wanted from me is permission to kill themselves, permission to commit suicide, which I gave, because it's not my place to say no. I told her what would happen, what it would be like, as far as I could tell. And she was absolutely certain that she should kill herself. I have no idea if she did or not. It's not that the call haunts me, but I think about the call a lot, because I did say, okay, if this is something you want to do, I'm not going to tell you not to do it, because I actually go with what is told to me in my head. I don't say my opinion. I say what they say. So
how long ago was that?
Oh, golly, probably about 5 years ago.
And the only time that's happened?
Yes, actually, it is the only time that has happened. I've talked to so many people who are dying and completely, they know they're terminal and they want to know what's going on. I've actually gone into palliative care with people, and all I'm told to tell them is they're going to be okay. I actually get so confused. I think, oh my God, they're going to rally. They're going to live, because all I see is joy and happiness and all this wonderfulness. And that is actually their death that I'm seeing. So that's why I have this idea about death that is different than what other people have as an idea about death. Because I just see this as a drop zone a little bit.
Yeah, that would probably come back to, if somebody wants to end their lives, you can't really stop them. Yeah, I've had a number of friends take their lives in various ways over the years. It's a lot. It's a lot to imagine each of those people coming up to that line for themselves. Do you have something to say, Christina?
A very close girlfriend of mine, Andrea, I've known since we're both ordained priestesses together 20 some odd years ago. Her boyfriend just jumped off a building in Vancouver 2 weeks ago in her presence, 26 floors. Initially, I heard there was maybe ketamine involved. I'm not sure, but he's from the States. They've been together for 2 years. They met years ago, but it's really devastating when you hear it so close to home. And of course, it's traumatized her because she witnessed it. So I don't know what was leading up to it, but it, so that's been on my consciousness for a bit, being such a close friend of Andrew's, to what she must be going through. Her whole life has been disrupted by it. And then another friend of mine's been given a couple of weeks' notice. There's a vigil for him this evening. He's got a brain tumor, Elijah. He's in VGH right now. You know, and then I'm looking after my 95-year-old mother. There seems to be a lot of, yeah, we're not getting out of here alive. But I think there is this choice to say we don't have choice. There comes a point when maybe we don't. And that would be the better option. I've always thought if I was on life support, unplug it. That would be a choice that you would have before that point. And you can have that discussion with your family. I know Julie Blue, a good friend of mine, her mother made that choice because she was suffering. And it was a family decision too. So the family was all part of that process. And I think that's very different when there's a lot of suffering. It's going to be a burden on yourself. There's pain, there's suffering. It's this slippery slope that concerns me, because if I was 18 or 19 in today's world, there might be like too many days when you just don't want to be here. And there's hormonal disruption. So there's all kinds of reasons why we would opt out rather than taking personal responsibility to live and to show up and to get the lessons that I came here to learn, it's almost easier to opt out. I tried to take my life. I was 13. My mother had a drawer full of pills, and it was her birthday. So it was obviously a cry for help. And I had to have my stomach pumped. So I didn't die, obviously, but I didn't really get the positive attention because my mother was so sick. And I was so sick of taking care of her. This is my adopted mother. She would have turned 104 today. I did this on her birthday, and all she could say is, how could you do this to me? So it was a very narcissistic thing. And then she died on my 18th birthday. For the next 20, 30 years, I felt that somehow that was all preordained and it was revenge. But it was a lot to do with the pharmaceutical industry because she had a drawer full of pills. And before she went to Europe, she got a shot. And because her immune system was so compromised from all the pharmaceuticals she was taking, she came back in a jar. So it came to me today that that was 52 years ago. So those are just incidences where passing, not by design, but still part of the system in a way. I don't, you know, I can't say that about Andrew's boyfriend. If there was depression, I'm not sure what led up to that, but we don't spend as much energy on life-giving opportunities as we do on the death cult. Just over the last 10 years, let's say, or 20 years is what I've noticed. There's just been a big decline in us going towards cultivating life. Just feels like there is a depopulation plan that's also part of an agenda that is making it too easy to have these kind of, with Planned Parenthood. I mean, there's a whole history of it. Yeah, very destructive. So I think that maybe there's a collective death wish in a little bit of a way, and it's very easy to tap into that. But there's also a rebirthing happening on the planet. So we're maybe in a choice point individually and collectively. So that's just what I wanted to share.
Well, thank you for that, Christina. Yeah, here's to life while we're here. And again, it's time-limited offer. Kayla in the chat says, the worry is that one day the choice of who dies and when may be taken without consent at some point. Maybe that seems extreme now, but it could happen, especially to those with physical or mental health issues. There was I think it was part of Russell's thing last night, where there was a short clip of this woman whose brother, I think, had gone into the Vancouver hospital, possibly with depression. I'd have to watch it again. 10 days later, died by mate, and the family hadn't, like, they didn't know. Apparently, it's not supposed to be offered as an option. It's only supposed to be if the patient or the person inquires about it. But it sounds like more and more it's sort of a treatment option, and it's a terminal treatment. It's not a life-giving treatment. So I'm not really sure how all this is supposed to unfold. We have Danelle joining us here, which is awesome. Danelle, thank you for joining us. This is very exciting.
Sorry, I'm late.
Oh, that's okay. We're having a pretty lively and thought-provoking conversation about medical assistance in dying and suicide and personal choice, you know, concerns about where things lead. I met you through your book that I helped you get published suddenly. You're on the West Coast, right? Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, we were just talking about the accessibility of MAID and how it's been put on hold for the mental health aspect, but there's still a lot of availability of it to people, and it's a concern to some, and, you know, a gift to others as to what people need. And Kayla just adds here, it feels like the systems are more interested in subjecting and killing us than helping us live happy and meaningful lives. Yeah. That's what I've been thinking more and more lately, is that the best we can do each day is cultivate that joy in ourselves to counteract that. And sometimes it's hard to do that. Sometimes it's easier just to feel despondent or down or discouraged about things. And there's always something that you can choose. But on the flip side, that's the way to really move forward. And, you know, as far as it goes, how you live is how you die, is what some people say. And so if you want to die happy, I mean, you know, doing something you enjoy doing, right? Be enjoying your life. So that's my vote. How about you, Duane? Did you have something else you wanted to say with all of this?
Everything I've just been listening to you, I know, very interesting in what Christina there was sharing about the big pharma thing and her mother having the drawer full of pills. Yeah, I know where you're coming from on that one. As far as when I relate it to Norma, my sister, I was just typing in a comment, and I'll send it in a minute here in the chat. They're never showing any alternative to deal with their problems, right? The trauma, the unresolved issues. Right from the get-go, I know, going back to Norma's situation, having dealt way back with anorexia and having gone through an eating disorders program at the Toronto General Hospital, and she did overcome that eventually. But, you know, after that, all the involvement with CAMH, psychiatrists, and their prescription pads, as I was saying to you, Lynn, like, she was making statements to my mom, like, oh, you know, having just turned 58 on December 17th, she did, but she was making statements like, oh, you know, when I turn 65, the medications that I need are not going to be covered. I don't know what that was even about. And I don't have, you know, $600 for a new battery for my mobility scooter. And as I mentioned to you, like, Norma could walk. She had mobility. She went over to the Toronto Islands. But, you know, when she had pain issues, she sometimes
took the scooter to the island.
Yeah. Well, I guess my mom is saying she did take the scooter over to the islands. But, I mean, she could walk. But if there was pain issues, then she would resort to doing that. But, yeah, no, they're never showing any other way. And so you get into that mindset, you know, in that little bubble of big pharma, I call it, and they cannot see beyond it. You've already messed up your brain circuitry and your, I'm making a reference in my comment in the chat there to Dr. Phil and Dr. Oz. Every time I used to watch an episode and they were dealing with people who'd been, you know, on illegal street drugs or whatever, Dr. Phil's comment was always, you've messed up the wiring in your head and how you're going to have to tear that all down and detoxify and rebuild yourself back up. But they're not showing that. This whole system, I think, is so overwhelmed with the social workers and the psychiatrists. They don't know any other way. Just take this medicine, you know? Yeah, it's killing all kinds of people. I'm always telling people, I was aware of this before. I think many of us were, but I think the pandemic just exposed it even more, the corruption, right? And just how bad this whole system is. Yeah, that's my comment, Lynn. And I'll send my chat there.
My condolences about your sister and Pauline's daughter. And yeah, it was quite something, you know, to be there and meet your family in such a time. And also Kayla says, a big problem is being priced out of the things that can keep us comfortable or actual healthcare, which is not just pills. They are actively trying to eliminate natural health products that many use instead of the regular pharmaceuticals. Yeah, that's a big issue underway in Canada right now as well. Duane says, my sister Norma definitely was tied up in the world of big pharma. They are never shown any other way to detox and build themselves back up. The drugs mess up your brain circuitry and wiring. Dr. Phil, Dr. Oz always make that point. The medications that have just, again, become so normalized, and just to not trust other options that have been time tested as well and more natural to our bodies. Feather, go ahead. I see your hand is up. Sorry for the delay there.
I don't know. This thought just came into me a couple people before. It's like, why aren't there workshops on the fear of dying or the fear of living? I mean, why aren't that part of the social programming here? Because there's a lot of people that have a fear of dying, you know, and if there was consciousness, a raised consciousness, in a good, positive way, you would want to live more because you're not so scared of going, you know. Some people live like, oh my God, I'm going to die. Or, you know, like they live in this tension-filled thing, but maybe they actually have a fear of living, not a fear of dying. Just be curious if any of these kinds of programs are up and coming.
Maybe we should change the name of this to The Art of Living, right? Yeah, I remember coming back after my aunt died, driving across the country, and, you know, I was on the road for weeks, and get back to my, sit in my dad's office with him and say, you know, oh, Aunt Jean was so organized. It was such a gift to just have everything in order for her when she died. And do you have stuff together for you and Mom? Mom had Alzheimer's by then for many years. And this was her sister who had died. Dad said that he had started to, but he was afraid that if he got it all organized, he would die. And I think, well, that's sort of funny because I'm in that place now. I've organized a lot of things. I have my own commemorative bench. I have money in trust for the funeral home and for the cremation. Like, I've done all these things a number of years ago now. And yet I have a messy page of passwords. Like, I just cannot get this organized. And it's like, I have all these pages. If I don't get this done, it means I'm going to live long enough to do it or something. And the other day I thought, you know what? I'm going to just pretend all day that I'm not going to die today. And then that way I can just take the pressure off and I can just enjoy my life today. I think there's a balance to find, right? Like, between accepting it and being aware that that's part of what makes life precious is that it is time limited. And yet you don't want to constantly be walking around with it hanging over you and that pressure. So how, you know, it's a real art form, as a friend used to say. Go ahead, Bobby.
Okie dokie. So being a medium, I constantly think about death. And I actually think about when I'm going to die. And all I actually think about is, what if I haven't done my job properly? What if I did not do the task that I set out to do? Because the hole in my head to me is a gift from them that I'm supposed to use to help everybody here. That's part of the reason that I'm here. And that's my only fear of dying, if I do not get it all done before I disappear. And the other idea is actually my three kids, because I don't want to miss things in their lives, which is so silly because I already know that people on the other side don't miss things in people's lives. They get to be a part of things. They know about their grandchildren. They know about achievements and things like that. But I still kind of want to be here. I want to touch my grandbabies. I want to be part of all of that. I don't want to because of the people I know and the people I love here. But I want to because I want to know I'm right. That popped out the way I did not want it to. So yeah, thought I'd say that. So yeah, I found this show, and I think it's on Prime. It's called Swedish Death Cleaning. And I've actually watched it twice already, the entire series. And it inspired me to actually Swedish death clean my house, because the idea is that you are preparing so that the people, when you cross over, don't have to clean everything up. That's kind of what you're doing, Lynn. You're getting it all ready. But this is because nobody knows what to do with your stuff, because it means so much to you, but it might not mean much to other people. And they kind of scare people and show things going to landfills and stuff like that. Like, if you don't deal with it now, somebody else has to deal with it after you die, and they might not deal with it the way you want to deal with it. Swedish death clean. Yeah, same sort of idea of getting your poop in a group so that other people don't have to. And Lynn, you are an excellent example of that, but maybe not with passwords.
Yeah, well, thank you for that. And thanks for the reminder as to why I was agitated and out of sorts yesterday, because I recently took on more furniture. And so I was rearranging things and just feeling, you know, what I do occasionally is just feel overwhelmed with stuff and thinking, is that why we're here? It's just to move stuff around? Like, the purpose of life must be more than that. At one point when I was letting go of a lot of stuff before I left BC and moved back to Ontario, I started photographing things before I let them go, because that takes up less room and you still get the visual comfort, you know, just really wanting to evaluate, like, what is the meaning of these? What meaning do I put in these objects around me and the, you know, the visuals, and how much I count on my eyes. And now I'm taking drops every night to keep my eyes pressure down, you know, and so I'm valuing my sight. And I know that a lot of the satisfaction and pleasure I get in life is through sight. And being able to use my eyes, which I do constantly, right? All of us here are using our eyes constantly. Yeah, so anyway, I'm receiving this furniture, realizing it's going to be just more stuff for somebody at some point to deal with if I don't. But I'm also finding it helps me to organize the stuff more, which makes me feel better and makes me feel more organized and then more able to integrate my presence in the world in other things I'm doing beyond my stuff, which is important, not to always just be with my stuff. So coming back to meaning and why we're here. And I was thinking about, if you want love, give love. You know, if you want company, give company. We can tend to withdraw and be isolated if we're suffering or we're in pain or we're feeling lonely. And yet, by taking that step, like, I'll go out and I'll share the heart cards, and it makes a difference in people's lives. And they just go, wow, I really needed that message today. And well, thank you, you know, and that makes me feel better, right? Then I feel more connected. Not everybody has heart cards to share, but it's that thing of just giving somebody a compliment or saying hello or smiling or taking that moment to step out of yourself, you know, to connect with somebody. So I'm just mentioning all those things because I'm getting organized with my stuff. Then at least, you know, what's meaningful to me will be at the top or will be left. I'm getting a bin. I'm getting an empty bin today, and I already figured out the first thing that's going in it, and I'm going to start shoveling things to the Goodwill that I don't need. Okay, so the same. So Danelle, I would love to hear from you. I don't know, I'm putting you on the spot, but if there's anything you'd like to share with us about anything so far or anything, that would be awesome.
I'm not as familiar maybe as some of you living in the United States. I only learned about MAID through you, Lynn. But I'm a mental health professional. I'm a licensed professional clinical counselor. And so it's alarming to me that, you know, a mental health diagnosis would be one of the ones that would be allowed, because I have a lot of clients that have attempted suicide and were grateful that it wasn't successful. So I think in the moment, a lot of times it seems like the only thing to do, but there are a lot of other things that could be done and treatment. And, you know, I don't know what your mental health systems are like there. I think someone said there wasn't the support. You know, ours have a lot of room for improvement.
Yeah, thank you, Danelle. Interesting perspective that you have on how people are feeling and what's available. There is that concern by some that in Canada, in some ways, it may be seen as a way just to deal with it, is to clear out some of the problem of people being homeless and not having places to live. Although, you know, I heard this interesting comment the other day that who is applying for and receiving MAID, and it sounds like it's Canadians, like it's Canadian citizens, like it's not immigrants. Presumably, immigrants are coming here for a better life and wanting to live, right? So why would Canadians be lining up for this? And I mean, obviously, every situation is different. And I'm not, again, I don't want to be judging anybody for what their situation is and what choices they're making. I really don't. I am concerned about, like we've been expressing, I'm concerned about the direction that it's going. And yeah, ultimately, I'm not sure if everybody who's applying can actually be making informed consent. I have heard that people who administer MAID, that they are required to continually ask, continually confirm that that is still their choice, that they can change their mind right up to the moment of the injection. I've also heard that apparently a lot of the drugs supplied for the taking you out shot is supplied by Pfizer, who made the famous vaccine. This could be another avenue, you know, for drugs. And then, of course, something we didn't talk about at all yet is the harvesting of organs. You know, an increased number of people with organized deaths could be possibly voluntarily donating their organs, or maybe it's a way to get more organs. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of topics, a lot of issues to think about with it also. Christina's in Spain.
Yes. Yeah, speaking of stuff, you know, my mother won't let me get rid of anything, and she's 95. It's like, well, are you taking it with you? And who is supposed to do this when you're going? Like, she won't even talk about it really, but now I just have to do it without her noticing. She just says somebody else can do it afterwards. Well, who's this somebody else? Who would that be? Like, just like the neighborhood's going to come in and clean out your house? No. There is a totally irresponsible attitude of that. I keep giving her books and she asks, where did this come from? Your own bookshelf. You have hundreds of, I've gotten rid of books that she doesn't even know because she has so many. And how many books are you going to read before, you know, it's like, she just won't let go of anything. And I'm thinking that she's still here because she's attached to the material realm. Very much so. There's this I don't know where it comes from, but of accumulation and not even a willingness to purge, even at the end. So I've just had to do it a couple of rooms that she hasn't even been in. So those are the easy ones to do. And then looking to see, is there anything of value or whatever? But there's all that stuff too. I've, you know, the will, the paperwork. I feel like I have taken on a two-year-old. I'm mothering the mother because I'm looking after every aspect of her life. And I forget about my own sometimes. I don't have one right now. That's why I have to do these calls here and there so that I stay connected to what is in my soul's evolution. You know, this is part of my soul's evolution, but it's also a bit of a sacrifice that I'm making because I don't know how long it's going to be. And I have put everything in storage of mine and I'm paid storage fees in Canada. I'm here. It's not like I'm enjoying life in Spain. I'm 24/7 as a caregiver. So I'm trying to find the balance in being the caregiver and also that there will be an end date. I have no idea what that looks like in a foreign country and what to do. And so I have to start looking at those kind of things because she won't talk about it much. And at 95, there's not a lot of friends. I'm the only family. The other people that were involved before I got here inserted themselves into her will for 50,000 euros. So I've strategically gotten her to correct that. That was a big one. That was in the last couple of weeks, which is huge because they had to prove, I had to prove sound mind. And there was definitely, it was not okay what they had done, but that's because I think it's common everywhere. Maybe I thought it was just common in countries where you've got expats and no family in the midst of someone to protect that kind of thing happening. It's very common for caregivers to insert themselves. Here, just sign this. And that's what happened. So I'm doing a lot of kind of correcting of nefarious activities, but I feel like I need a massage and and you know maybe a swim in the Mediterranean Sea, which is far away, but a walk away. But I can't stay away from the house very long because I have to be here all the time. So yeah, it's an interesting place to be, and there's part of me that would say it would be better if it's sooner than later, in some ways. You know, and I think 95 is a good long life to live. If you look at you, Lynn, thinking about like, you're going to probably got another 30 years. You could like really like you're talking about it now as though, you know, it could happen any day and you've got all this stuff. You could be living in another country or who knows, right? Like, still got a lot of life ahead of you. You got a lot of books to write too. You got to help me out mine. So yeah, there's still a lot of life left to live. And I'm trying to find the balance faced with this departure, but not knowing when or how or what. I feel like I'm over having to be over responsible.
Well, it's epic and admirable that you're there. And I think of you a lot, Christina. And I really, yeah, really glad you're there. Thanks for sharing. And I'm glad we can offer this respite for you here.
Yeah, thank you for having this, Lynn.
Right on. Okay, we have Feather and then Bobby. And I just want to mention first, Kayla says, imagine the danger if they lowered the age and those parents who have children simply to harvest parts for another sick child. I mean, we just have to hold steady here and focus on the best outcome of these changes. Go ahead, Feather.
Yeah, just empathy. Couple things. Empathy, first of all, for Christina and your situation. I can't say it's comparative, but I did take care of my mother. And when you're on the other side, it's amazing. But at the same time, there'll be a gap of, oh my gosh, like I still have memories of her, like that come in like different times and they're beautiful. They're exhilarating. So it's really a precious time for you, Christina. And I, you know, I don't know what the services are there, but for sure, if you can get a PSW in to give you a respite, we went to the different societies that came in. I found a local person who came in, gave me respite time, even just 2 hours. So it's a journey to take care of yourself. And I'm sure you already know all this. The other thing I wanted to say was just a comment that Bobby was talking about the Swedish. I had to look up that series. That sounds great, Bobby. I hope you can put that in the notes, Lynn. The whole idea of like taking a look at yourself because nobody else really cares. Like I say certain things, they get, oh, if my niece comes to visit me, I'm going to show her this. And that's a little bit out reality. So I think a little bit what I need to do, and so just a statement, is burn. Just burn some of this stuff, like put it into the ashes. Let it go that way. And I love that. And I love that for what it gave me as a memory. No one's going to get the same feeling from it or whatever. So it's like burying a relationship in a positive way. I'm just going to burn it. Thank you for that memory. And, you know, probably 2 weeks later, 1 month later, I won't even remember what I burned. So I appreciate that idea of letting it go in a ceremonial way for yourself, not for other people, because it is your stuff. Thank you.
Thanks, Feather. Oh, my goodness. Yes, so much to consider. I want to acknowledge Valerie, who's made several attempts to come on, and she seems to be here with us. Thank you for joining us, Valerie. Go ahead, Bobby.
I had two things. One, Christina, while you were talking, I didn't mean to, but I read you a little bit, and you might want to look at the death duties of Spain and how much your mother's death will cost. There's something like that. There's like a wrangling thing that you might not be emotionally ready for when she does actually depart. I saw that, so I thought I'd have to tell you that. Also, Feather, I've actually seen people on the other side who were hoarders on this side remake their stuff on the other side. So when you showed yourself burning stuff, they showed you getting to the other side going, oh my God, there it is. Like you actually will, because it's part of a thing to burn food or burn clothing for somebody's on the other side. It is a Canadian Indigenous tradition. So they're actually showing you burning things and then waiting for you on the other side. So just so you know, if you want that armoire on the other side, burn it. But because the things don't actually exist, so we can rebuild them anyway. So yeah, I understand what you meant. Okay, that was it.
Oh my goodness. Tony has written the book, right, Christina, about 21 mistakes caregivers make and how to avoid them. I'm sure you could write a book too.
Maybe I should read that one first.
Dwayne, you always have something to say.
Mom and I are trying to share the same chair. To be on camera, we're probably just doing a lot of reflection because of Norma's passing on the 12th of January, right, which will be a month tomorrow. So, between everybody that was at the funeral on Wednesday and later on at the church and at the reception and everything, and being on a Zoom call, you know, with some of the people from the Seventh-day Adventist Church in Holland Landing that attended. Yeah, we still have to deal with clearing the apartment down in the city, right, because she was at Claremont and Dundas. So you were saying about getting more furniture. In this case, it won't come to us because we have enough clutter here with my sister having moved previously, my other sister, Ruth, that you met. It might go to my niece that's in Barrie or something, right? It would be nice for her to have some of Norma's personal things. So, you know, dealing with all of that. Maybe Mom was just saying, go to Salvation Army or something, you know, whatever. I've really enjoyed this conversation and the input from everybody because in relation to like our having this experience so recent, it's all so relevant. And it's great to have this dialogue and get people talking and thinking. And my encounter, Mom's encounter with Norma's experiences and other people that I've known, that I went to school with, that were on all kinds of big pharma, I've known for so long now that we just completely need to get away from all of it, get back to a more alternative, holistic way of health, right? The only way we overcome all of this stuff with all this pandemic stuff, right, is, again, as they keep saying, stop complying, start questioning, stop being followers. I don't know if you've ever heard, Lynn, or anybody else there from John Rappaport, a journalist in the U.S. He was saying, you know, long ago, people gave away their personal power. They just signed it away to medical technocrats and people with letters and initials after their name. You know, listen to the experts. They just gave it up. That's how this whole thing went on for over 3 years, right, was that we were completely like powerless beings that just, it was crazy, right? So thanks for hosting these. This is great.
It's just really great for you and Pauline to join us. Dwayne, really honored.
Thank you. Well, we're glad to be here.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pauline.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you. Yes, we will be in touch and follow up.
Yes, thank you. Mm-hmm. Always look forward to getting that Druthers, eh? It's such a great paper. I'm going to go out tonight, actually, and put a few out. Every time I have any negative feedback for somebody, like you share something, because I got a one person in particular without mentioning any names or any profiles, but thanks for the information, but please don't send me anything pertaining to lockdowns, masking, or COVID. And it's like, yep, still got to get it there and on the mountain bike and roll these things off the press, because some people it hasn't registered yet. But yeah, it just motivates me to want to fight even more,
Well, thanks for sharing, Duane. I appreciate your emails that you forward to me. So,
thank you. Well, we're on the same page, so you always kind of get a feeling about who's going to be receptive and who may not be based on certain things in their background.
It's been such a challenging time in so many ways, and it's good just to have people to connect with and just feel like you're not going crazy.
Yeah. Dr. Christian Northrup said on a Zoom meeting with Vaccine Choice Canada, she said it's a spiritual battle, and these people are so done. This whole vaccine thing and she's like, don't get me wrong. They will not go down without a fight. But in the end, they are so done. It's a new way of looking at things. The upside to the whole COVID thing, she said, was if it hadn't happened, we'd be going on day in, day out, week to week, same old thing. For those that it was a wake up call in their questioning, it does have a positive side.
Yeah, I agree. It's been a gift, in many ways. It's been a real challenge and really horrific for a lot of people who haven't been able to pivot, or, they just couldn't make sense of it. And a lot of friendships have been divided. There's been a lot of waking up, which has been really positive, and so many new connections, you and Pauline, many people finding out what's really important. And again, that comes back to values and purpose. And I think that there's got to be more purpose to life than just not suffering. There's ways to celebrate and enjoy the time here.
Yeah, I found even going to the Global Freedom Rally at Queen's Park in Toronto or wherever you happen to live, the people that, like you were saying, we never would have met, the conversations that would have never taken place. Yeah, no, everything happens for a reason, as they say,
Yes, for sure. All right, Bobby says, Feather, not to be a pain in the butt, but is there maybe some heart chakra work that you are here to do for all of us?
How can I answer that? other than recently having to go to an osteopath's friend, a brother here where I live on the land, and for heart something, heart condition, heart something. And it's been an interesting time to just be in the moment about how that happens for me and how I give on that level. And I'm not sure what to say, because I've tried to walk in my truth. I'm not always understood. And I used to feel rejected all the time for my consciousness, for my beliefs, for my creativity. But I don't care about that anymore. And that's a huge relief. So maybe that's a place of deepening my heart connection with whoever wants to be open to it. And just the same as being open to myself. And lately I've been wearing this beautiful heart that a girlfriend of mine that I've known for 50 years gave to me on my 50th birthday. And the heart chakra is definitely a tender place in me. And it's connected to breathing. It's connected to so much, to softening. Thank you.
Thank you, Feather. Go ahead, Bobby.
The reason I even said it is because you were talking about something having to do with your breathing, and then you spoke about the throat closing up and your head getting foggy. And to me, that was your throat chakra, your third eye chakra, and then your crown chakra. And when I see your heart chakra, it does this. It's almost as though they gave you this so you could concentrate here a lot and have to actually concentrate physically, mentally, and spiritually into this chakra so that you could move it up. Because I actually think you're a healer. So I just had to tell you that because they make me do that. So I hope that's okay. Thank you, Lynn. And thank you, Feather.
Thank you. Go ahead, Christina.
I'm just reading the sample book because Dennis sent me the link to the Amazon book, 21 Mistakes Caregivers Make and How to Avoid Them. And wow, what a journey she had. Oh my goodness, Tony, where she thought she went into it and it was 11 years later. So I bet you wished you had a book like that when you were doing it. So I'm going to probably pick this up on a Kindle or see if I can get a soft copy. So thanks for that. I appreciate that you've written this book. I mean, 21 mistakes. I'd rather read like 21 things to forget the mistakes. I probably already made them anyway. It's lovely that somebody has put the time and energy into it because they experienced it. It's true. Like every day there's something, you know, the hearing aid, being the advocate for something. She's no longer on pharmaceuticals. So we're trying to make it a lot of fun, actually. And I'm lucky I've got a caregiver who was just here, Natalie, who I've hired as to do the bathroom thing, which is a big part of it. I don't do well in that part. So part of it is I'm afraid I'm so small, I'm 5'0". And if she falls on the floor, I can't pick her up. Quite an experience.
Oh, I think of you as being so much taller. We've never met in person. How interesting.
I'm only that and 115 pounds at the most. And my mother's can't lift the weight. So I'm learning a lot of things, like just even getting more physical about it without putting myself out in so many ways, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually.
Well, I'm glad that you got a couple of people in place with your mother who can help and trust. Yeah, that's good. Thank you, Christina. Go ahead, Dennis.
My care partner, Tony, came back. I know she had dropped out for a bit. I had to share Tony's book because Christina made mention of it. I sent it directly to her and not the group. But Tony, you're able to now comment about how your book may help others.
Well, the 21 mistakes are designed to help you prevent the mistakes, or if you've already made them, give you the solutions and a way to personalize your action plan to solve a particular problem. So once you know what the mistakes are, then they become your superpowers, because we've all made the mistakes. That's the whole point of the book. And speaking with caregivers, it's not just my own experience, but in working with other caregivers, you know, you feel so alone and you feel like, oh, I'm so dumb, I shouldn't have done that. But we're all making the same mistakes. And that was the whole point. People need help out there. We've got this learning curve and we're struggling to figure out, you know, the decisions we need to make, the solutions to our own particular problems. And while the solutions may be a little different, at least the book gives you something to think about. And it's very short chapters. They're all laid out the same. I give you the mistake, why it's important for you to consider this, and the power that you'll have in managing the problem. And the fact that you also may have difficulty getting to the solution, because you're dealing with people most of the time. Could be professionals, it could be family members, and it could be the person you're caring for that might be resistant as well, but why it's important to continue working toward the solution. Also, at the end of each chapter, it refers you to my website for a worksheet that you can fill out that will help you with your action plan. And also, I was just putting this in the chat, I have a whole resource page, free resources on my website, Heart of Caregiving. And there's also a lot of blogs that address certain situations. So please check that out if you're caring, or if you think you're going to be caring for someone soon, or if you're caring for yourself. Dennis and I are caring for each other. I'm caring for myself with a number of situations. And honestly, the book is a great reference to remind me about self-care. Thanks, Dennis. And, you know, for us to work together toward a solution. In fact, Lynn, I wanted to let you know, I've scheduled surgery on my back. I've been having some terrible pain for the last year and a half, and I've finally found a doctor that hopefully has a solution to supporting me. This is something I've dealt with every day for a long time. Yeah, some days it's hard to keep going. I just wanted to mention that. You know, so I either don't keep going, I just rest, or I just keep going. And, you know, I wrote the book all of last year. And a little bit before that, I wrote the book. So it was nice to have a purpose because it got my mind off the pain. And even going on the cruise while I was suffering a bit, putting my attention on other people really helped me set the pain aside and, you know, my issues and help other people have a good experience and learn some things that will help them in their caregiving experience. Okay, that's my pitch. Thanks for the opportunity. Thank you, Dennis.
Thanks, Tony. And thanks to you and Dennis being on today. It's really awesome. I was really happy you were going to be able to join us. Yeah, now you've got a situation where you're having a lot of suffering, but you're not going to consider MAID, are you?
No, I Dennis is always going, "How can I help?" Well, we know he can't get rid of the pain, but he can give me a good back rub. He can make me feel better. So that's my go-to. Here's how you can help. I'm going to lay down and you're going to rub my back for as long as you can. That will make me happy.
Yeah, let's take the moment by moment of being happy, right?
Yeah. Learning to ask for help. That's a chapter, and that's something just about everybody has trouble with. Who do I ask? What do I ask for? Will they reject me? Will I get what I need? Yeah, I've explored that in detail because it was something I had particularly had and continue to have trouble with. Again, I noticed I'm not the only one. When you're going through the caregiving experience, a lot of times you just think you're the only one that has the thoughts, that has the feelings, doesn't know the solution, whatever it is. You're not the only one. I mean, 53 million people in the United States are going through this right now. I don't know how many people in Canada, but it's huge. You know, we're all going through this and we need to get together as a community and support each other and find the solution so that this can be a learning experience, you know, that this is all happening for a reason, as Bobby would say, nodding her head. I believe that too. So the challenge of caregiving is really an opportunity for us to grow. And that's also a message in the book. So to have a positive mindset about it and to ask for help so that we are not on this journey alone.
Yeah, that's great, Tony. Thank you. Janelle, do you want to share briefly about your book and your experience? We're going to have a longer conversation for the podcast, but just a brief mention would be great.
Yeah, I just wrote a story about the death of my husband, Patrick, and just what the grieving process was like. Basically, it's a collection of blog entries that I wrote over the course of 5 or 6 years. It's been almost 8 years. Lynn helped me pull it all together into a book and was published last month.
Yes, and your Patrick died suddenly, as the title says.
Yeah, so he went out for an early morning bike ride and was hit and killed. So writing's been very therapeutic for me, and I became a counselor after he died. So it's been a journey.
Yeah. And thanks very much for joining us today, Danelle. Amazing. Lovely.
I'm going to jump off because I have people
Okay.
coming over.
All right. Well, thank you again,
Okay.
Danelle. We'll be in
Okay.
touch. Yeah, go ahead, Bobby.
I felt that I had once again shared too much, so that's why I wasn't sharing. So, because sometimes I feel as though I dominate, or I put too much in, or I talk too much. Because, yeah, it's lucky I have to raise my hand. Let's just put it that way, because I am blah, 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 of a human being. So, yeah, this has been wonderful. I love these talks. I love these talks about death and this open conversation about the life that leads up to death. And maybe we should do the art of living next, a whole other series on that and how to live better, waiting for that. That's gonna happen anyway. Yeah, it's how you live, not how you die. So, yeah, thank you so much, Lynn. And thank you, everyone. I have learned so much from everyone. Thank you.
Thanks, Bobby. And I saw Dennis nodding his head there on that suggestion. So that might be an idea for next month. Yes. The art of living while we're here. Duane, yes.
Yeah, when did you start doing these, Lynn?
The first one was in April, and it was a one-off, but it was so well attended and appreciated that I did another one and then another one and another one. So this is number eight. A bit sporadic. They've become one a month for the last few months.
Yeah. Well, I found out, simply because you were the one that started delivering the druthers in place of Tim, right? So.
Yes, so we've only met each other since the fall. Yeah. I was reflecting a lot on the funeral for Norma from Wednesday, and just, it's such a unique way to meet a family.
Yeah.
So I appreciate your welcome for me to be there.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm glad you came. It was great to have you and all those people that showed up from even people, some of the people I've been at the freedom rallies with and everything. Yeah, it's great support. Thank you.
Yeah, it was a good turnout. Pauline, nice to have you with us as well.
Yeah, thank you.
We'll see you guys again soon.
You're just up in Newmarket, right? Yeah.
Yes, that's right. The rest of us, I haven't seen Valerie in many years. I've never met Dennis or Tony in person. I have never met Christina in person. I have met Bobby once in person, but we are in touch more often otherwise. Yes. Thank you, Valerie, so much for showing up.
You said it was a one-off, the first, the Art of Departure, and you've kept doing them because there's a lot of useful information and a lot of people have a lot to say, and the books that have been written that would be very helpful for people. How do you get your podcasts out there so that more people can listen to them and learn from them?
Well, such a good question, Val. Thank you. Actually, I do feel that my podcast is sort of in a little bay of a lake. Like it's sort of off here. It's not way out there. However, I was quite interested to see that the last one that was on made over 100 people, it just, the numbers just kept going up steadily in the last month. Obviously, people are listening to it. And one person commented that directly to me that they found it more interesting than they thought it would be. So that was cool. Each one has been different depending on who shows up and what subjects we cover, but each of them has been unique. And I think that one in particular had a lot of strong opinions and perspectives, which always makes it interesting. I mean, I was thinking with the MAID article that I pulled together for that in January that, you know, if it was all agreeable, it would be quite dull. I remember this interview I heard years ago where the guest at the end said, I hope it was controversial enough to be interesting. You know, yeah, that makes sense. So in terms of how to get it out there, I'm sort of depending on you guys to help me with that, because you finding it of value and sharing it with others helps it be shared, because it's available. And in the show notes of each episode is the link to each of the other episodes. So you can easily jump around and listen to what you like. Bobby, since you're here and Dwayne and Pauline are still here, I'm going to put you on the spot and ask you if you have anything for them around Norma, who's recently died.
I was wondering if I was going to get asked that, because I do a little bit. I actually think that your sister Norma is, happy. I think she feels strong. I think she feels free. I think she feels like, finally. I think she had a hard time being physical. And in this physical world, I don't even think that she felt even in tune with her own body. And therefore, her body just kept on going back and back and back and back at her. And I think it caused a lot of frustration. And I don't know if she passed of a stroke or something having to do with her blood, but she shows a lot of constriction within her blood. And she wants me to talk about what I find constrictions within the blood having to do with psychic or spiritual energy that needs to flow through. And she does this. I don't think she actually found her voice, but I do believe very, 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 very much that she loves you guys. Are you Christian?
Yeah, yes, we are, Bobby. Yeah. What you're saying about the constriction and that, yeah. Unfortunately, yeah, Norma did take her own life, and unfortunately, she did it through hanging. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. Because she shows me the Bible. That's why I asked if you were a Christian, because she wants you to know within, I call it the Christian construct, what you expect to happen for her is not entirely, but it is, because it was a suicide. And I know firsthand, and I know what she is worried that you are worried about, but she doesn't want you to think of it in that way. She also wants me to tell you what I see when people commit suicide, that they go and they actually are with angels, and the angels help them to figure out why they did that and what happened. Right. And in a case like your sister's, I actually think she'd get a mental health pass.
Yeah, I do believe too that they're not fully accountable for their actions due to the influence of the big pharma drugs.
Yeah, precisely.
No, thank you for that, Bobby. But I was going to say to Lynn, and for you, Bobby, and everyone, it was funny, my next door neighbor who attended the funeral, so she's Catholic, she goes to Our Lady of Grace here in Aurora. You know, she gets up every morning and she goes 7 to 8 p.m. to pray, and then they have a mass. I'm like, I didn't even know you had a mass that early, weekday mornings. But you know, she told me the other day, she printed off some copies for us. The minister who had the service for Norma at the church, the church that my mom attends. So he just recently retired and lives in Wasaga Beach, north of us. And he came for the service. So my neighbor, Kathy, she says, I looked up at one point, and I'm not sure how she experienced this, but she said, it was like I could see Jesus, and I could see Norma, and Jesus was with Norma standing behind that pastor. Okay. So that, yeah, that was very comforting. Yeah.
Good. Yeah. Cause I actually, yeah, closer to God is what I heard before you told me what she had seen.
Yeah.
So showing that Norma is closer to God in the grace as well.
Yeah. Yeah. There's different ways that you can take that, right? Was that something that God through a miracle? Like I said this to the Seventh-day Adventists people, Lynn, because they have their own understanding of life after death and whatever, the way they interpret things. So I said, would we take it maybe that it's God through, I don't know if you want to say miracle, he allows somebody maybe who'd be parted in that way to see something just to say, you know, I like you were saying, Bobby, even though you chose this way, it's certainly not an ideal way to go out, but I understand where you were coming from because you were compounded by the drugs. But also, look at all these people. It's not the ideal way. You need to know that before you maybe, I don't know, you cross over, you come into heaven. You need to know what lines did we cross? What errors or mistakes did we make here on earth? But look at all these people that loved you, that came here. You know, that's the way I took it. Her statement about, you know, seeing Jesus and Norma. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I agree completely. And actually, I hear the words, and I hope this is okay, but I'm hearing it, sanctioned by God. I think what Norma is trying to tell you is that she's okay with God. She also wants me to let you know that the faith that you have is what you experience on the other side. Faith is so incredibly important. And each faith, what you believe to that you're is going to be waiting for you, will be waiting for you in the positives.
Right.
And people expect fire and brimstone and stuff and are gravely disappointed because they can't find that over yes. there.
Yeah. Well, and that's interesting that you say that, Bobby, because, you know, we had some people from the Seventh-day Adventist Church, like Mom and I watch a lot of their prophecy things, but I've always been pointing out to people, you know, that whole two school of thought regarding, you know, the idea of eternal hellfire. So the Seventh-day Adventists, they don't believe in hell as an eternal, ongoing, forever and ever burning place. They believe there's a new heaven and a new earth that forms, and there's the second coming of Christ. Yeah, and Mom's church is the same, but the interpretation of hell is they don't believe that a loving God would have somebody thrashing about forever and ever in a fire. They believe there is a fire that does consume evil on the earth, you know, when there's a new heaven and a new earth that forms, but it's a one-time thing where it's all consumed, it's burnt up, and there's a reference in the Bible where it says, and they will become like stubble beneath your feet. They're not ongoing, burning. They're like, what would be the point for a loving God to perpetrate that? Because even the suffering of Hitler's victims has ended. Is God not more loving and compassionate than Hitler? So it's the way things are interpreted. Like if you go to the original Aramaic and Greek, you know, and how they interpreted the word Hades and various other things, there's a verse that talks about, I can't remember that's actually referring to a place outside the walls of Old Jerusalem where they burnt garbage day and night. It was a dump, but it's been interpreted as hell. Or there's a reference where Christ after crucifixion was taken off the cross and it says he was in hell for 3 days. But that doesn't, if you look at it from this perspective, imply a burning place because the method of covering the body then, right, was as in Jesus' case in time, where he was geographically, put the body in a cave, roll a stone in front of the door. He was hidden away. He was covered up. And that ties in with an old British expression referring to the helling of potatoes. Dig a trough, plant some potatoes in the ground and cover them up. It's referred to as the helling of potatoes, to be hidden away, covered up, not implying a burning place. Yeah. So yeah, it's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that is very interesting. I've never heard that before. Thank you very much. That's incredibly interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been reading about that for a long time. Yeah. So, but that's a tenet belief of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, right? Aside from going to church on Saturdays, because they think under Constantine, the true Sabbath. Saturday was changed to Sunday, right? And
okie dokie. Yeah, Constantine had a lot to do with current Christian beliefs, as far as I know. Yeah. That is very, very interesting, because I don't see an evidence of hell when I speak to people on the other side. I just don't. I see pedophiles come out of a different place than everyone else, but that's it.
Yeah.
Other than that, you're a big jerk. Well, you're just going to have to pay your dues and figure out why you were a jerk and feel how you made other people feel.
Yeah, and I've actually heard, you know, in the Seventh-day Adventists mention, for some, you know, when you have the formation of the new earth and judgment before God, the creator, they talk about first a resurrection of the dead, where the dead in Christ shall rise. Then there's the people who didn't believe in God, didn't accept, or they rejected, or they scoffed, or people who are just downright evil. And it's almost like they explain it in terms of different levels of, those that were evil and that rejected God would have nothing to do with higher power. If they were really evil, I guess people like Hitler, they explained it in terms of their suffering may be a little bit longer. They don't believe even Hitler is going to be tormented forever and ever, as terrible as his atrocities were, right? Even his victims' suffering ended, you know, so.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with you on that. Yeah, I think Hitler was probably just put through a lot of trials where he had to learn and experience what he did to other folks.
Yeah.
Rather than a whole new fire was put upon him.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bobby. Thank you for Norma and her family. And Val, you got frozen and now you're back.
But I didn't hear the end of what you were saying about getting your podcast out. And I also was going to ask you, you said that there's 112 people or something that listened to the last one. How are people finding you?
That's sort of how I ended up, was just saying that I count on you guys who attend to share it with others. And I expect that that's sort of what happened with the last one, because it's such a controversial topic and a current topic. I think that probably the title of it may have made some circulation and people sharing it and listening to it and finding it of value.
Do we just share the link that you send us afterwards, or can somebody search it on one of the podcast sites somewhere?
Yeah,
or something?
I'm just on one podcast site, as far as I know. It is, I'm not on different podcast sites. It's just at Podbean. So yeah, if you share the specific page link. Yeah, and thanks for asking. Yes, Bobby.
I know for my audiences, because I have a YouTube channel and Instagram, if we could see each other, I know you don't do it like that though, video as well as the audio.
I don't edit video. And so I just have made it a thing that, you know, so that people feel less self-conscious that it's just for audio, right? And then I tidy it up. Like, for example, I need to ask Duane, are you and Pauline okay if I leave this part of it in, or would you prefer, like what you and Bobby were talking about, would you prefer?
Yeah, please leave it in, Lynn. That's great. Yeah, we're fine with it. Absolutely.
It's, you know, it's important information. And if you're okay with sharing it, that's awesome.
Oh, yeah. No, it contributes to the overall conversation for sure.
Okay, thank you so much. Yeah. All right. Well, you guys, it's always hard to say goodbye. I thank you very much again.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Thank you, Bobby. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Lynn.
Thanks, Duane. Thanks, Pauline. Thanks, Bobby.
Bye. Talk to you later.
Okay, great. Thank you both. Bye, Pauline.
And she said thank you. Okay, there we go.
All right. Thank you. Thanks, Val.
You're awesome. You're doing such a wonderful job with this. Thank you. And I'm sorry I wasn't here for the whole thing. I listen to them when I'm walking.
Oh, nice.
Because they're so long. Sometimes it takes me a couple of walks, but I usually get through them. Time to go, Lynn. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm glad you were able to join us for some of it, Val. It's awesome to see you.
See you soon. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Sunday, February 11th, 2024. Art of Departure 8 is over, and it was almost 3 hours. Oh. And yet, it feels like there's always more to say, and so interesting. Oh. Yeah, maybe we will change the name to The Art of Living. Let's do some Art of Livings. The hawk just flew by. I'll take that as a yes. Thanks for listening. Livingonpurposelynn@gmail.com. And the podcast site And also my editing site is theonpurposepodcast.podbean.com. And keep living. Find the joy in living. While we're here, being alive each day, finding the purpose in this moment, doesn't have to be a big life purpose. It can just be a purpose in this moment to stay on track. Keep loving, keep living, keep loving it up, keep sharing that love. You are love. I love you. Talk to you soon on Living on Purpose.